CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, good people of Earth. How are you? Well, that's one way to start your Friday. Leanne says it's raining where she is, which made me a bit jealous for the first thing in the morning. Do love a little morning rain. We've got Bulelo, we've got Leanne, we've got Ben, we've got me, we've got you. We don't really need much else. We can start our weekend properly now. Jeez, what a day. Yesterday was busy. I had a lot of shit going down. That was good. So here's Rob Cunningham. I think he's actually with Simpiwe this morning. He was there yesterday. He's checking us out from the inside to learn our ways. So I suppose you could call him. You could call him some kind of intern stroke. What would you call him? Maybe like someone who's going to do freelance work for us, that kind of thing. So we welcome Rob.
I hope so. Otherwise, you're going to have a dangerous man with Simpiwe in a small room.
I know. We've already got that, though, because Bulelo's there with her every morning, and so far she's okay.
No, we're never in the same room. Simpiwe's made sure that we're never in the same room.
Oh, that's a lie.
Interesting how you don't deny you're a dangerous man. Yeah. That was your first go-to.
No. Capable of anything.
Listen, I got to tell you, if you're talking about dangerous, though, like Simpiwe is actually the dangerous one. I heard her yesterday in the office. She likes stirring up shit, eh? She, yesterday, true. She was stirring up shit with Lebang and with Bulelo while I was there. And I thought, yo, Simpiwe is one of those people, because she's always smiling and friendly and nice. And she really is. Like, she's a happy person and she brings a good energy. But when she wants to cause shit, she's worse than Jane. She actually gets
snake in the grass.
Snake in the grass, right?
Love it.
You gotta look out for her. She's deadly. Because she just drops a few breadcrumbs. She's like, "Oh, Bulelo, you said this the other day, and I heard this, and And then she asks me,
she lights the match and it walks away.
Yes, that's it. She's like in that meme. You know that meme where you've got the child and it's got the fire in the background and the child has that evil look on its face? That's what it is.
Yeah. or she's just like Skeletor. She'll say something mean and then run away.
I love those Skeletor memes are so great. They're so great. Listen. I have to go back to yesterday's show briefly because there's a lot of talk about that on the street. I have to say I had a lot of fun yesterday in the Burning Platform because we had John Steenhuisen and he was obviously going to, you know, talk about how great the DA was. And I was giving him the gears. Like I said to him, I said, basically, you know, you guys put up those posters in Phoenix, which I don't have a problem with, but then you apologized and took them down. So that shows me you don't, you know, you guys don't have the courage of your convictions. And then, of course, we had someone from Musi Maimane's, what is it called, One Movement SA. I think her name was Mudvani, and she came on as well. And then she brought on some crap about, like, as a black woman, and I just went and just, you know, immediately, because I was like, what if I said, well, as a white man, like, so what? What difference does it doesn't bring any authority or
those
that.
Things aren't interchangeable, though.
Well,
just remember,
but I don't care. Like, as a so what? As a pygmy from the vegan forests of Borneo, so what?
There, now you can say that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any this lived experience bullshit is just completely misrepresented all over. It gives people, well, they think it gives them some kind of power. I mean, let me play you this clip quickly. You get some idea of what we're talking about. And we can talk about it or not, but I don't want to make it the focus of the morning. I just thought it was an interesting discussion yesterday. And as part of the Burning Platform, this is how people distract you from an argument. And I'm not prepared to put up with it anymore, you know. And this idea that everybody goes through. I watched Condoleezza Rice on The View. Now, I never watched The View.
Oh.
No. But it was, I literally saw.
Hold on. I
put it on my Instagram because I saw, it was probably a 5-minute clip of Condoleezza Rice, who's one of those people in American politics I actually have respect for. You know, politicians you got to be careful of. She said the opposite of what this guest was saying yesterday. Look, listen to this quickly. Their biggest
priority. You
obviously
don't experience the kind of racism that I experience on a daily basis. Okay. So to say that is something that no one cares about,
your personal experience is completely anecdotal and unimportant to all of us.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate the fact that you think that the experience of a black woman in this country is unimportant and irrelevant.
I'm not interested, Mudzuli, I'm not interested in identity politics at all. Nobody really is. They're only interested in themselves.
Yeah, Mudzuli's.
That's amazing.
Honestly, the thing we've got to start saying to people more is, wah. Like, especially when they start whining and complaining about shit. It's like, wah. Let me play you another clip.
You complain, it's only interesting to you.
Yes.
You know when people complain, mm-hmm. I wish more people would realize complaining is only interesting to you, the person complaining. Yes. Everyone else is just tolerating it.
Exactly.
Correct. And most of them are not. What I said to her wasn't me being mean to her. It's like I'm trying to help you to not be boring to other people. Especially if you're going to come on a show. Like, no one is sitting there going, oh, I really want to hear her moan some more about how she perceived. Now, let me tell you, this is not someone who's got anything to be embarrassed about. This is a woman who's able to acquit herself, as I said during the discussion, admirably in a discussion with the leader of the opposition, who's no flunky politician. This guy's quite smart. You know, he's adept. He's taken on all the other politicians in parliament. And she got up on this show and she was making, you know, for Musi's new party and for independent candidates and electoral reform and lots of other stuff. So she's not someone I felt sorry for. I'm not going to treat you like a kid and everyone else like an adult. If I respect you, I'm going to treat you like an adult too. I wanted her to know that, first of all. Second of all, she went to Stellenbosch University by her own admission. She's very well qualified. It doesn't seem to me that institutional racism has been the biggest obstacle in her path so far. I would almost say that having gone to university in South Africa means you're not allowed to use that argument anymore. As much as you may not have as many resources as, you know, a billionaire's child, you may not be a Zulu princess, you may not be born to the president or a member of the ANC's elite, but you can't go and cry about that shit if you've been to university and got more than one degree and you are now the spokesperson for a political party. She's young. She's clearly very capable. Don't make me go, wah, sorry for you, because I don't feel sorry for you. I'm going to treat you like I treat anyone else who I respect and who I, on the face of it, am meant to respect. And I'm going to give you the same arguments that I would give an adult who I have a lot of time for and who I think can fight back. So here's what I saw after that, which made me think of this. And I'm glad that these two people, who are much smarter than I am, can explain the position of this a whole lot better than I can. They are Eric Weinstein, who is easily one of the world's leading intellectuals, and Jordan Peterson. Listen to this.
You do have power over yourself and how you interact with the world. So if you encounter a system that's very unfair, you can complain about the unfairness and you have a very low chance of affecting it at all. Or you can say, well, it may be unfair, but I'm going to play the cards I've been dealt as well as I can. And that's something over which you have a tremendous amount of control. There's almost no return on the investment in complaining about a broken system.
Well, it's especially true if you're not already competent and seem to be competent. Maybe you have some ghost of a chance of changing things if you are competent and are seen to be competent. But before then, you can break things, but building them, that's pretty damn hard.
Absolutely.
And so you can work locally and then you have some chance of success and you can find out what is under your control. And then maybe you can turn yourself into someone who can make cautious systemic adjustments and have them be for the good rather than for harm.
Whereas if you take the other approach and you say, well, the system isn't fair, and I'm going to change the system, but you don't invest in your own competence, then you're unlikely to fix the system. But even if you do, you still don't arrive in it competent. So you're still going to be outcompeted by people who did invest in personal responsibility. So in some sense, it's just a loser of a position from the point of view of an individual's allocation of their time and effort.
Right. I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. I think it's just those two are so sharp, and they just lay out the case a whole lot better than I do. Anyway, I thought we'd just deal with that this morning because it was getting quite a lot of attention yesterday, and I thought it deserves some attention again. So what's been happening, Ben? We haven't caught up with you for a couple of weeks.
I went away. I tried to get work-life balance back because I haven't really been away since March.
That's funny.
And it's okay, Leanne, we can get to you in a bit. It hasn't always got to be about you. Yeah, it was really cool.
You're funny.
It was really nice because I got to do the things I love most. Well, I used to love most, like watching animals be animals and playing golf. Although I don't really like golf as much anymore.
Uh-huh. But the animals play golf.
Yeah, they do. At Skakuza, I played 9 holes with a hyena. He cheated, unfortunately, but otherwise he was good company. Yeah, it was cool. It was very, very nice, much needed. But yeah, it's always so difficult trying to get back to work and do things after a week away. Everything just feels so much more trivial than you ever thought it was. Like, do I have to really read through this whole email right now? These calls. So yeah, maybe it's just obviously going back to the wilds and my roots and my DNA, and then it awakened something that has been dormant for quite a while. So this week's been tough as fuck. It really has been.
I went away for the weekend last weekend too, and when I got back, I went like Monday was a bit of a bastard. But the rest of this week, I love what I do. I really do. I've got to stop complaining about stupid shit. I just said other people shouldn't complain, or so should I stop. When I do, I hope it's entertaining. At least I try to make it funny. But I'm happy, man. You know, life is damn fine. If you wake up on a spring morning, and you've got the weekend ahead of you. And you're not starving, and you're not desperate, and you're not miserable, and you don't have hatred and nastiness running all over your system. You're lucky. You're lucky. Just be
for sure. Horns growing out of your ass.
Horns growing out of your ass. Can you imagine how uncomfortable it would be to sit down with horns growing out of your ass?
Then you can complain.
So
who's experiencing that?
Well, Mbulelo is doing investigative journalism for us now. You know that?
Oh, he's okay.
Yeah, yesterday he sent me a video. He was very carefully listening to Alan Ford on Wednesday when Alan was talking about how he's moved into this new apartment building in Sandton, and it's a nice apartment building. Yeah,
Flabby Alan Ford. Ford still got a show.
No, but he was on our show. So, So he explained how he's moved into this new apartment, and there are hookers outside his apartment on West Road South, and these hookers shout and make huge noises, and like they're loud all through the night. They don't care about curfew. And like, he actually went out into the street, gave them like soft drinks and told them, please, can they keep it down? Because even though, and they tried to like have sex with him, and it was hilarious. So Mbulelo,
I've never heard of anyone buying a prostitute a Coke.
Exactly. So Mbulelo went and found the scene of these hookers and the exact place that Alan was describing. You take over here because you did a little bit of investigation. You managed to track the exact place down.
I did. It's just so coincidentally, and it's excellent because it's the gym where I work out is actually just around the corner. So I was walking home and I thought, oh, Alan Ford lives here. That's where the women that wanted to jump a gay man work. And then that's where I thought, oh, okay, this is boom, boom, boom. There's a hospital. And then I thought, no, these ladies are smart. It's right by the Morningside hospital. Mm-hmm. Should they get venereal diseases, you know, whatever, just pop in the hospital.
But it's
back at work by Monday.
It's so funny, you know.
I figured it out.
We have neighborhoods where rich people try to distance themselves from things like, you know, things like prostitution and drug dealing. And meanwhile, the biggest drug dealing and prostitution centers are always in the richest neighborhoods, on the richest roads.
Of course.
You know, that's how it works.
But it's also
a different theory for why they're at the hospital.
Mm.
It's so that when their wives are in hospital for something and have to be there for a week, they get entertained for
That's so cynical. That's so cynical. So while the old wife is, you know, beating a hasty retreat from life, you're like, oh, I think I'll go and get a hooker.
Or having a baby
Give me a hooker.
But it's a horrible sign of the times for all my cautious if you have to try approach a gay man for business. Alan's the gayest man in Joburg. And if that's you trying to get some ront out of, wow.
Business must be bad.
No, but guys, if you look at that street, because my office is just off that street. One of the main reasons it's so popular is because it's quiet. It's a very quiet street, but it's like in a good area.
Yes.
You're not going to have these women sitting outside the Radisson or like outside the car train station, are you?
No.
Well,
it's a good point.
I mean, there are a lot of famous hotels around Joburg that pretty much have hookers at their bar the whole time. People had to point this out to me because I'm duff with this stuff. It's like I never really knew whether people were high on cocaine or not. And then someone had to explain to me what the symptoms of that are, you know, the grinding of the teeth and the like wide eyes and the, you know, that startled look and the constant like rush of energy and the bouncing. I had no idea some people were on cocaine the whole time. Similarly, I was like, look at those ladies there at the bar. I wonder what those ladies are doing at the bar. And, like some of my friends would look at me and go,
"That lady's so pretty.
Those ladies are hookers, you moron. What's wrong with you? You're stupid or something." And I'd be like, "Oh, I didn't know that. I thought they just dressed provocatively, you know?"
Yeah, if you don't go out much, especially in South Africa where girls are quite, wouldn't say prudish, but they're very much like you will never see them make the first move. If a girl talks to you in a South African bar, there's a very good chance she's on the clock because she's... And if you're an average-looking guy, she says, "Hey, handsome." Yep.
Yeah.
She's a prostitute.
That's it. No, nobody has ever said, "Yeah, Ben, you've nailed it. Hey, handsome."
It's just that I used to work. Yeah, I used to DJ at a bar in Stanton when it was at like 2005, 2006, and there were a lot of hookers that came into that area. And I was DJing from a raised area, obviously, because it's DJ box. And I look across, and you can see the guy who's on business. Because he's generally about mid-40s, losing his hair. He hasn't taken that much pride in his outfit, but he is having the best time with good-looking local women.
Mm-hmm.
And they're prostitutes. But like they're not being like rough or whatever. They're being discreet as a prostitute can be. But yeah, I mean, you can see like Sia would absolutely hate them.
He was
trying to get money out of people.
Always very negative about hookers, but they work hard for their money. So hard for
them. They work, you know, they work very hard for their money, and they've got to be like chameleons. Right. They've got to assimilate into worlds that you know obviously don't look down on them. It's a tough gig.
Shame.
Tough gig. And then you got to have sex with very ugly people.
Yeah, well, that must
be the hardest thing.
That's the hardest part because you also got to pretend you're enjoying it because they ultimately are your paymaster. So you have to be a pretty good actress as well. We were talking about this just the other day with Lebang, and we had some interesting insights. I feel like kinder towards a blessee than I did before that conversation, because we eventually came to the conclusion that even if they're getting the money, they're still kind of empty on the inside. You know, they're kind of like, even if they're being treated to a really special weekend away in the Seychelles or whatever. Ultimately, they don't want to be there. They'd rather be with their friends or their family or the guy they actually love than the guy who's paying them, but they need the cash. That's how it works.
Well, you're completely like hiring out your soul because in order to like enjoy it, you've got to like switch off so that you become soulless.
Mm.
And then to be that close with someone and those kind of things, it's a very mixed up society that becomes a way of making money.
Like
you guys are being so empathetic this morning.
I'm not. And it's important for me at this point to Gareth and Lebang came to that conclusion. Yeah. I feel rocks.
Bulelo doesn't care.
Let's be very clear.
Bulelo hasn't had a feeling since the late 90s. But I will say this. I think like a lot of us who don't love our jobs, those who are not fortunate enough to actually enjoy what they're doing for a living, like let's say you're just really doing it to earn just enough to scrape through the month. You've lost your other job. This is something new. You're doing it transitionally. Maybe you're in tele sales or something because that's fucking hard work. You know, you're kind of a hooker as well for the time that you're in that job. That's why I'm careful not to judge too much. You know, we put sex on this pedestal like that's the thing you shouldn't sell. But you can sell your brain and your labor, and you do that for the right amount of money,
don't
you?
Phony products, phony services.
Yeah, crap. Just terrible stuff.
In many ways, you can sell a company your youth. Like if you're a sales rep and you're constantly going and peddling some crap, you do that for 10 years, you've sold them your youth. Nobody wants to go, "I can't wait to get back and sell Darnie another kilogram of salami or whatever."
Some lobby doggy.
I was talking to someone the other day who worked in the butchery in that town for a while. He's a smart guy. He's like, he's working in, I think he's in insurance now. And, you know, he worked in the butchery. They sold him this bill of goods. They said to him, come and do the marketing for the butchery. And there's a guest house attached. And they've got this, like, you know, it's in a typical South African small town. So there's a little lodge guest house thing. And attached to that's the slaghuis. And this guy was sold the story, like, if you come and work for us. And he's, you know, he's a young guy looking for his first job. Then we'll let you market the lodge. That'll be your thing. And we'll, you know, you can stay in the lodge because it's really nice there and pools and beautiful gardens. And so he thought, great. Well, within the first week of being at the slaghuis, he was hauling around carcasses and, you know,
yeah.
not having an easy time of it. So the people lie. And he felt like a bit of a prostitute in that job. Because he had to pick up like lamb carcasses and cut them in half, and you know that's not fun.
So, wow, that's awful. I just wanted to ask this: was where do we draw the prostitute line? Because I see all sorts of girls where I live, which is where the hoity-toities are, be in relationships for that weird money reason. Are they better than the Alan Ford's bone jumping?
That is such a good modern moral question.
Yes.
Because you can then go down to the point of they go, oh, no, I'm just a social climber. Because that's another term that's kind of been normalized into something nice.
Is that how they're dressing it now, Ben? Mm. Social climber.
I mean, people use me as an authority.
On TikTok, the cover-up word is accountant. So if you see hashtag accountant, you know what she's doing.
Oh, wow.
TikTok is so filthy.
No, but Leanne, I'm talking about people who present themselves as normal, but they're actually dating and staying with whatever guy for the money. Are they not prostitutes themselves, just covering it up? And are they not the social climbers Ben's talking about? Hmm. I'm not talking about
prostitutes. On the definition, on the pure definition of prostitute.
Yeah.
Which is, giving up sex for money.
Yeah, so Leanne, it's well put. So we've got to have that in one corner, and then we've got to put female nature into another corner, that in the DNA, you're still looking for the best of society to procreate with and obviously provide security and a future with. So I don't think we can be too harsh as guys, because what often happens in the show is that we definitely provide the male perspective on a few things. So I think you got to have prostitutes, like sex, money, and then you've got basically women just surviving, okay? Because there's two things still there. The one sounds quite medieval when I put it that way, but it's a factor. And I think we'd be hypocrites to say that we don't choose women for certain reasons.
But the whole reason, but to Ben's point too, and by bringing balance to this conversation, like most men spend their lives just making enough money and having enough success that they can attract the woman who they're attracted to. That's all they do. So, you know, 100%. Let's not, if you're a woman and you occasionally will use your female guiles to attract a partner or a mate who may or may not be providing you with luxuries or sustenance, whatever the case may be, that guy is working his tits off just to be able to make you smile with a gift. Because really, like he could have spent 30, 40 years toiling, lifting heavy things, moving shit around, putting up buildings, moving mine shafts deeper into the earth to pull out some ore. He's doing whatever he can to impress you as a woman. And part of that is having money. No guy wants to be in a position where he has nothing to offer a woman. And that's how we are, whether we like it or not. You can complain that that's unfair and what a way to think of the world. And
great is life?
It isn't transactional. The fact is, a lot of guys are only working. They're only doing anything, waking up in the morning and going to do a job because they hope to attract the woman that they're attracted to back. They want her.
Completely. Right?
No argument there. Yeah. I think every heterosexual guy that I can speak
to. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, guys, like for a personal point, I've been reading a lot of stuff around this, and I find it interesting that I think my entire life I've been doing that until the last 18 months. I've been working more on like, actually, what if you don't focus on that and you just focus on yourself and try and do things that are better? suddenly the world looks very different. So you look back and you go, okay, so I spent my entire life basically gearing up to be that guy who I can have more sex, because that's what all guys do, right? Yeah. So that's why you go to gym. That's why you want to make money to go to places and meet people. That's why you want to buy certain clothes. That's why you want to have a nice apartment, a nice car, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Shit, if you can somehow get out of that trap, because it is a trap. And then the whole thing about men when they get together is the peer pressure of like, who are you boning? Like, how hot is your girlfriend? And that becomes a massive social currency that then obviously you want to then one up your mates on. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to go, oh yeah, I'm kind of dating this girl. She's a bit of a frumpy 4 out of 10, but you know, we get along and it's nice. Like there's no one's high fiving that shit in man world, right? So what you want to do is you want to, even if you were the most vacuous woman, but she is super hot, the your mate or your contemporaries will go, yes, let's just see this chick that this soaks with. Mm. Yes, she's hot there.
Your social value, your cachet goes up.
And I don't care how smart you are, most guys will fall into that trap. And I'm sorry if I lose my man card by giving insights here, but that's how we're programmed.
Yeah. There we go, ladies.
If you can somehow escape that, if you're a heterosexual guy with blood running through your veins, there's always that element because it's attraction, right? We all have that. It's just endless. But if you can somehow not prioritize that anymore, it's amazing the clarity of thought. It's like having a complete and utter paradigm shift where you can actually process things in life. You become more rational. You become healthier. You become smarter. You become more balanced. And you actually then, the real plus side of this is that then you'll actually become someone of higher social currency anyway. Because you're not focusing so much now.
I think that's such a useful insight, and it's so honest. And now you've ruined all the secrets. Now women know everything about us. Look, we're not complicated.
Sorry.
You know, Bulelo, I see you nodding as well. We're not complicated men. We're actually really, really straightforward and simple. Like, this is where feminists completely misunderstand us, is they think we are Machiavellian and manipulative, and we try to keep women out of things, and we control business and politics, and we've got these boys' clubs, and we get together and we have like discussions on how to keep women out and that kind of thing. There's none of that happening. Promise you. Like men, mostly, they are friends with their friends and they will tolerate and trust their friends for pretty much anything except if they invade their own territories. But we're really simple creatures. Like we're not trying to complicate anything. We're primitive as fuck as well. We have these simple, straightforward goals like women, success, the respect of our friends, being able to provide and secure our families. It's pretty much it. We're not after power unless power is the thing that brings us one of those things I've just mentioned. We're not after money unless money is one of those things that brings us one of those things I've mentioned. We're not after any kind of social approval or being able to fit in unless it brings us one of those things I just mentioned. Those are the only goals we have. Pretty much that's it. I doubt very much there are other things outside of that. You know, people talk about self-improvement and all of that. Even chasing those things is just a means to get to the end that I just mentioned. That's all there is. So don't worry. Promise you we're not planning and plotting. Women do that stuff because women are a lot more complex than men are. Women have spent a lot more time in all of our history in evolutionary terms, talking to each other, figuring out social hierarchies, deciding which guys are good, which guys are bad, also figuring out which women they can trust, which women they can't, what society's made of, what the children need to grow up. Like, women are way more complex because they are far more social, they're far more, they trust their gut, they're intuitive. We're not like that. I promise you, mostly when a man says something, he means exactly that. He's not trying to get a reaction out of you or make you feel a certain way or any of that stuff. Very rare for us to ever put that much thought into things. We just say it and do it and then often get into huge trouble for it.
Yeah,
I think that's a valid point. And I think women have had to be like that because traditionally and biologically, we tend to have to look after offspring.
Yes, of course. So, by the way, just by the way, Leanne, I'm not saying that women or men are better than each other. I'm just saying that the one,
one
is like straightforward. The other one is a little more complicated.
I'm agreeing with you, and okay. just thinking why women are like that. And it's very interesting that you raise that point. They almost have to think for other people. They have to think for their sisters and their mothers and their daughters and their children. They, you know, a man can kind of slot in anywhere, but a woman has so many other things to think about.
Well, also, there's actually a hardcore, like, genetic reason for it, is that women are smaller, and it's a survival thing. It's actually not thinking about other people. Is you have to be complicated because you don't have the advantage. Why men
sheer
can be
strength
simple
and size.
Is we can physically impose ourselves on our environment.
Well, unless you're
women
a dwarf.
Have to be more complicated.
I mean, if you're a dwarf.
Unless you're Dinklage, yeah.
Oh, shame.
Unless you're Dinklage, then he can't even see his
dwarves gossip a lot.
Jesus, dwarves, look. They're a bunch of gossipers, those dwarves. You've got to watch out for them, hey.
Always. Yeah, guys, well, I've got to go. But in closing, I would say, you know, as a guy, just quit porn, stop eating your meat. And
you think
nice.
Quitting porn is that's an important factor to leave us on, Ben?
That's a different conversation for a different day.
Oh, okay.
That really is.
Well, we look forward to that.
No, okay. Because it's in keeping with this, but it's a whole different level. It's not just porn, it's what it is. We'll chat about that some other time.
Well, on that clanger, Ben is going to exit stage left. He's got important things to do this morning, and he's going to leave us thinking about why we should quit porn.
No, you really should. We'll catch up on that next Friday.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Cool.
Bye, everybody.
There he is. There's Ben Karpinski, Ken Barbinski, as Gord calls him. By the way, Gordo is looking good. I mean, he's like lost a ton of weight. He is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's put an enormous amount of effort into that. His children's books are coming out soon, so he will join us. I know a lot of people have been asking. So we'll get Gordo on ASAP. You know, some people just, they have lives.
I think it's so enviable in that people who haven't struggled with weight need to remember how much weight fat people have actually lost in their lifetimes.
Oh, well, I know you're talking to me here, Leanne. Just say it.
How many times they've lost 30 kilograms or 60 kilograms.
Yeah.
They've lost that 60 or 30 kilograms four times in their lives. So essentially they've lost so much more.
It's
a long fight.
Gord has lost about 4 mbulelos in his life, and that's impressive.
Is he like after a revenge body now?
You are more interested in this stuff than me. I remark upon, oh, you're looking better than when I last saw you. You're looking worse than I last saw you. And I'm not, when I go on a diet or I exercise or I try to get my body in shape, it's only because I've said such terrible things about fat people in my life that if I get fat, I'm fucked. They'll come to my house with pitchforks and torches, and they'll have hypocrite stickers and put them on everything I own. And I'm ruined.
Boxes of pork pies on your bonnet.
I will be.
And they, film you eating them.
They will make fun of me until I am dead in the worst way. And they'll have every right to, because I've said nothing nice about fat people for like 25 years in media. So I will deserve that. That's why I have to stay moderately in shape. I'm never going to be in the shape of Ben or Mbulelo, but I will not get fat because they'll kill me. They'll come after me. but Gord, he said to me a year ago, I'm going to do this. And, you know, God bless him. He's done it. So we'll catch up with him. You can ask him these questions. I can't answer them for him.
Oh, good for him.
That's long amazing.
Yeah. Graham says, that's like when 3Anne lost her third leg. Yeah, when did you shed your third leg again? It was when you were very little, hey?
I was about 11, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was only this big, so I didn't lose that much weight.
Hey, Leanne, you want to tell us about this? Silver Nell says, skeletal remains have been found inside the Mikakachi Creek Environmental Park. They're confirmed to be those of Brian Laundrie, the famous YouTube caravaner. Tell us what happened, or van guy.
Mayakachi.
You know about this, right? Because you've been following this story closely. Tell us more.
Right. So, I'm not going to go into the details from the beginning because we have things like Google and because I've been through it before. But where we last left, Brian Laundrie was on the run. Now, interestingly enough, there were suspicions that he was actually holed up in his parents' back garden. So in Florida, you can buy these underground bunkers for various reasons, right? To store things and because of the heat above ground, etc.
It's like rent a cellar.
Yes. And there are many drones flying over his parents' house at any given time. There are also planes. People on TikTok pay money and they all contribute to have these small planes fly over with those banners behind them saying justice for Gabby. Okay. Flying over the laundry parents' home.
People.
I've done it twice now. I mean, it's an expensive project, but anyway, there are drones flying over their house continuously. So the one day the mom and the dad are in the back and the mom's watering this flower box, this square flower box. And she leans down and a hand comes out of the side of this box and takes something from her. So, and right next to this box is a Wendy house, a Zozo. And if you look at the bunkers that you buy online, they fit exactly with this Wendy house and then a gap of grass and then this box. And it shows that he's like living underneath the house. So there was that theory for a while, okay? But now that theory's been thrown out the window because a massive development happened yesterday. So for a month, people have been searching for Brian Laundry in this reserve, right?
Mm-hmm.
That his parents presumably dropped him off in and helped him set up before Gabby was even reported missing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's quite used to doing these things and living barefoot and living off the land and being a bit of a caveman. So, you know, he's been able to survive like this. But only now, just yesterday or the day before, depending on American time, suddenly his parents decide they're going to join the search. And they found his backpack, his notebook, a whole lot of things within 45 minutes of searching.
So the parents obviously knew.
Everyone else has been searching for a month. The parents knew where he was, okay?
Sure.
The other thing is they must have been in communication with him. And then lost that communication because why decide all of a sudden I'm going today to go and find him. So they were followed by police within eyeshot. But all of a sudden they split, the parents split paths and the father disappeared into the bush and came back holding a white backpack and another object, which he then put into the backpack. So who knows how much evidence is being staged here, etc. But what you do see then, and this was a Fox News video exclusive, is a state trooper or a policeman or an investigator standing with the two parents. They're standing in a very close triangle. Their heads are down and they're looking at something and it looks like the parents are mourning. So human remains were found along with the bag and the book.
When they say human remains, I mean, the guy can't have been rotting away, not skeletal. He's still like meat.
No. So what happened was that he was found beneath a water line, which has now receded. So due to rainfall in the area, the water had been at a certain level, and that's why these state troopers, etc., hadn't found him. Now the water's receded slightly, and this is where he was found.
How long do they think he's been dead for, if he has been? I mean, they were still...
Well, the human remains were so indistinguishable from the natural surroundings that initially they were suspected human remains. So that shows you that he was probably soup, and they were only parts of human remains that they found. Remember, too, that you have things like alligators and other... you know, predators in the area.
Eaten her.
So it might have been a head and an arm or something.
God, how fantastic.
And that had kind of already been absorbed into the soil.
Great.
So now the whole thing is that people are angry because if he died just purely because he couldn't live off the land anymore and be undetected by cameras and things by going into shops and kiosks, he's not going to face the punishment he deserves. I mean, already we know that it was him who killed Gabby.
Trevor says
And there's another
Trevor says dental records.
Oh, dental records. That okay, that's new. All right. Come in. There we go. Thank you.
And Tracy says, yes, it is. It's finally time for you to say.
Let's be suspicious. 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 It's also presumed he killed another couple just before Gabby.
Well, why were you jumping to that conclusion? Was it a vegan lesbian?
There was a lesbian couple who went missing and were found murdered. And then when Gabby was found in a similar area, that's when they started putting two and two together.
Jeez.
And saying, okay, he might be a serial killer. And then also looking at the literature that he reads and the things he's obsessed with and the things that he draws. Deadly, macabre, bloodied cartoons and that sort of thing.
Elson says, interesting fact, four other bodies were found in the forest as they were searching for laundry. So who knows? You know, if you actually do a search of a particular area and you comb the area properly, you get archaeologists and forensic pathologists in, you'll probably find a lot of hidden shit, including a lot of dead people. Anywhere. Anywhere humans have been.
Yeah.
But maybe his parents just knew that he liked to go there as well. We have to stay open to that, you know? Like,
but they took him there. They drove him there.
Yeah.
How do we know that? Have we concluded that?
There was footage before Gabby was reported missing of the three of them in the parents' car driving into the reserve. And an hour later, only two adults signing out and leaving.
Yeah, wow. Serial killers, man. This is some scary stuff. I'll tell you what.
He's not going to face the consequences now. He's gone. Maybe he killed himself.
Well, he's dead. I mean, is there not a worse, probably the worst consequence in the world is dying.
That's a consequence.
I would say there's no worse consequence than dying. Being dead is about the worst.
I don't think so.
I think being dead is the worst thing you can do.
He basically, he unalived himself and now he doesn't have to face any punishment.
Well, you're just cross because we didn't get to punish him ourselves.
Yeah, he's dead. It's dead. Pretty bad punishment.
Just yeah,
and young, like now, being young and dead.
Now it's time for all of you armchair sleuths to get on with your lives. That's what I'm thinking.
there's still more to come. Now the parents are obviously they've been aiding and abetting, so there'll be a case.
Great.
Oh yeah, you're just getting started, Leah, and I love that.
Yeah.
So some headlines. We're not going to go into politics, but apparently we're going into social media. Former President Donald Trump has announced plans to launch his own new social media network called Truth. He's described the platform as being a place that would stand up to the tyranny of big tech, accusing the big tech companies of silencing opposing voices in the U.S. Social media played a pivotal role in Mr. Trump's bid for the White House and was his favorite means of communication as president. But Mr. Trump was banned from Twitter and suspended from Facebook after his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol. By the way, one person died in the storming of the U.S. Capitol, and it wasn't a policeman. It was one of the Trump supporters. So I know why we keep referring to this like it was some really dangerous, really terrible event. In context and in the story of U.S. politics, the storming of the Capitol was a bit of a damp squib. It was a bit of an embarrassment to Trump. It wasn't some kind of like power play. It wasn't some great big, you know, last move in Machiavellian chess. That's not what happened there. It was a dumb bunch of like people who were high on like a Trump speech and decided they were going to go into the Capitol. Nothing happened. Right, nothing happened. Nothing.
I think it's the symbolism, though. I think if people went to if somebody went and punched the Pope in the face in his office.
My point is, he was thrown off of social media for that, for the fact that his supporters went and stormed the Capitol. But Al Qaeda still have Twitter accounts, and Kim Jong Un has still got Twitter accounts, and you know, really bad people in the world. Like child molesters still have Twitter accounts. So, know what I mean? Yeah, I'm just saying. Anyway, he started his own one. Who knows what's going to happen there? I'm not in any hurry to sign up. I don't know if you are.
The thing is, the people that are going to join that platform are going to all be of the same ilk and have the same interests, the majority, right?
Yeah.
And it's just going to further fuel
division.
Yeah, and strengthen their outlooks and beliefs.
Well, here's an interesting story. They've successfully given a pig's kidney to a person in a transplant breakthrough
they hope
could ultimately solve donor organ shortages. So the recipient
was...
Kidney transplant. A pygmy. Yeah. The recipient was brain dead, meaning they were already on artificial life support with no prospect of recovering. The kidney came from a pig that had been genetically modified to stop the organ being recognized as foreign by the human body and being rejected. The work is not peer-reviewed or published, but there are plans for this. Experts say it's the most advanced experiment in the world, in the field so far. Similar tests have been done on non-human primates, but not people until now. Using pigs for transplants is not a new idea. Pig heart valves are already widely used in humans, and their organs are a good match for people when it comes to size. So this is really interesting.
Can you imagine how difficult it must have been for the family to consent to that? Here is this person on their last legs. Yes, they're brain dead, but can we please use him for one last experiment?
Well, usually...
Was it a South African bloke or not?
No, it was in the US. Usually what happens, though, is you are an organ donor, and then you say, if I'm brain dead, you can use my body while it's still alive to do things like this. I mean, there's only so much you can do with a dead body, but if you're still alive and you're brain dead, somewhere in your will it says, let the scientists have me so they can see what happens to a body while it's still alive without having to worry about me actually being awake and present and conscious. So it must have involved.
Do you know how many people need kidney transplants and they have to have this perfect match? And do you know how many pigs there are in the world with kidneys?
Yeah, yes. On both sides. Pigs within the human race and. Yeah.
I wonder if the pigs are having a meeting today. They're like, well, it's better than being bacon, I suppose. You know, let's take what we can get, guys. Yeah.
So Sally in the back, oink to you. I mean, we've heard enough of that.
Yeah.
Well, all right, next, kidneys.
One small kidney for a pig, one giant leap for mankind. Anyway, good for them. You know, I think we should stop eating pork if we end up taking kidneys. You can't use these animals for everything. I think there's a moral question here. Like, as humans, let's draw the line somewhere. If we're going to be taking their organs to replace ours, things like kidneys, then let's have the respect of not also eating them. You wouldn't eat someone if a human gave you an organ. I think
there's an argument against this because, okay, granted, you can take a kidney from a pig and the pig can still survive on one kidney. But most likely it's going to probably be a freshly slaughtered pig. And then that means, because there's another movement that believes in eating absolutely everything of the animal and using all of the produce.
That's called the Scottish. So, it's called the Scottish waste not want not movement. That's what it is. You don't waste.
And that's where haggis came from.
Well, there's also this argument. This is quite interesting. Derek says maybe the pigs are meeting about human transplants. Maybe the pigs are getting together now, going, you know what? These humans, for too long, they have just been users and abusers of our kind. Now it is time for us to harvest their organs for our use. Yes, pigs. If we can just develop opposable thumbs and get scalpels from the humans, we too can get their organs for us. That would be a hell of a thing. I mean, George Orwell's probably turning in his grave.
Yeah, and pigs are interesting things, right? Is that within a single generation, they can go from the pig that you eat at Tash's to a borderline warthog within one generation if their environment has changed. I mean, it's not
No,
there's no pig meat at Tash's. That's where you're wrong. Cassandra says, are you guys not using the WhatsApp line anymore? I kind of stopped promoting it because there is a phone. It's sitting in the studio. But to be perfectly honest, I haven't logged in for weeks. So if you've been messaging us on WhatsApp, sorry, Cassandra, it's a shame. I feel bad now. It's like you've been blue ticked the whole time and nobody's been paying any attention. Rather get us here. It's just easier. Sorry. I should have brought that up earlier. God knows. Bulela, will you just check that there weren't any like invoices or receipts or payments outstanding or anything really important in there? You know,
I'll do that.
Death threats. Yeah. And we need to know about those. Sure. I'm sure a lot of our fans and friends and listeners who were friends and fans and listeners have become angry with us because we haven't replied to any of their messages for like months. So maybe it's worth looking at that. All right.
Sandra says, since June, Gareth. You haven't logged in since June.
Sorry. That's my fault. Oh, wow. Mm. Would a vegan or a Jew or a Muslim be able to get pig transplants? That's a very interesting question, because those things are haram in Islam. They're not kosher in Judaism. And for vegans, obviously, they don't allow them to boast about being a vegan anymore. So what are we going to do?
Imagine there's no way that they'll be allowed to have those organs.
No, you say that. With the pandemic being what it is that we obviously know some of the genetic material being used for some of the
point.
COVID.
Good point.
Is pig based or not? Sort of some of it. The Muslim community is having some trouble with that on a philosophical level already. With some of the vaccines. So we're already in that dilemma, Leanne. It's currently being answered now, and it is, let me tell you, I do know somebody who lives in Lebanon. It is a shitstorm.
Jesus. I just saw a story about Alec Baldwin. Apparently, he fired a prop gun, and it was clearly a dangerous weapon. It killed a cinematographer and injured a director on a set. Now, he fired this prop gun. This is a true story.
He's currently in a series called Dr. Death.
Well,
I'm wondering if it was on that set.
Listen to this. Actor Alec Baldwin has been identified as the person who fired a prop firearm that killed a crew member and left director Joel Souza hospitalized in an incident on the set of a Western that's being filmed in New Mexico. Director of photography Helena Hutchins, 42, was rushed to was rushed by helicopter to a local trauma center where she died from her injuries. Director Joel Souza, 48, was also injured and is hospitalized. One crew member died and another was hospitalized after an incident involving a prop firearm in the set of an Alec Baldwin Western being filmed in New Mexico. The incident happened at 1:50 p.m. Thursday on the set of the film Rust, starring Alec Baldwin and Jensen Ackles. Holy shit.
There's another really famous film where that happened as well. I just forget what it's called. I'll Google it in the break and see if I can find it.
I've watched a documentary on the real life incident of that. Sure. Okay, that's difficult news.
I need to.
There's so many Baldwin brothers. Just replace them with another one. I mean,
put him in jail.
I mean, he's going to be in jail now.
William or Stephen or I don't even know what the others are called. There's a lot. There's a lot. So, I got to replace two doors in my house because they get a lot of sun and a lot of rain and they're wooden and they just every 5 years they're a disaster. They start falling apart and you can't have doors falling apart. So I'm going to put in aluminium ones that look like wood, but you paint them. So I said to my brother, "Who did you use?" Because he found this guy. So he gives me a number. So I phone the number, it just rings. So then I send a voice note to the number on WhatsApp. I'm like, "Hi, I got your number from my brother. I need to have these doors replaced, blah, blah, blah." About 5 hours later, I get a text message. I'm going to change the names for the purposes of this, but this freaked me out a little bit. "Good evening, Gareth. This is James's wife. My husband was shot dead by XXX on a hunting trip last year. I'm not working with this contractor anymore. I've asked them to contact you." I was like, holy shit.
Oh, no.
The husband was shot dead. And then she mentions the name of the person who shot him on a hunting trip last year. It's probably his friend. Like when Dick Cheney shot that guy in the face. They were on a hunting trip. These two guys were on a hunting trip. I mean, I'm not going to read too much into it. But they were known to each other. I'm sure it wasn't an assassination. It was probably a mistake. He was shot dead by his mate on a hunting trip.
What the hell?
I was like, you know, my first thought was, oh no, now I'm going to have to find someone else to make the doors.
Yeah. That's the inconvenient part.
So tough to find reliable tradesmen. Jeez.
If anyone knows a good door guy, I mean, like, that's... But what a story, huh?
That's not insane.
It's a different thing.
Jeepers creepers.
A hell of a story.
Because now you're a part of that a little bit, you know? All you wanted was two doors replaced, and now you're aware of death on a hunting trip.
I know.
Like, what if your mates kill you on a hunting trip now? Surely you've had that nightmare.
It was last year sometime. My brother said to him, geez, did you hear about this? So he goes, oh, I can't believe that. He said, the guy made really good doors.
Oh, no. Well, you know, people carried varying levels of value in people's lives, you know?
Well, he had value to us. I would have been I would have been pleased to have been his last client, but he had to go and get shot by his friend.
You know, his death ultimately could lead to a good thing. I mean, two doors down, three doors down, you get some good music.
Three doors down.
Upside to everything.
You son of a bitch. That's very good. Okay, so I got this message from somebody who knows these things. Jews can have pig transplants, but Muslims can't, apparently.
Okay. Interesting.
I like that. So there's some useful information, in case you were wondering. I did not know that. Did you know that?
No.
I didn't. I'm neither Jewish nor Muslim.
Yeah. All right. So
I presumed it would have been off the table.
Yeah. Well, there we are. You're allowed. There are very weird things going on out there at the moment. Nothing surprises me anymore, says Carol During. Yes, Carol. I know, but I still get surprised occasionally, even though I think I'm pretty solid.
Wise.
Well, I'm not wise. I'm unperturbed. Like, humanity's full of bizarre behavior, but this caught me off guard. And now I've got to find a new door guy, like I've said three times. Very annoying. It's usually due to wearing a mask and glasses. Glasses fog up and you load real ammo into the gun, says, is that Hein? Yeah. That's probably what happened to Alec Baldwin as well. He's probably wearing a mask and the mask slipped and fell over his eyes. And, you know, he was shooting into the air because thought it was a prop gun and killed the cinematographer. Well, at least there's a supply. I mean, listen. Guys who make doors, they're harder to find than cinematographers. So I think
100%.
They'll easily have already found another cinematographer, whereas I'm still stuck with the door problem.
Oh, my Lord.
It's not the fourth time I've mentioned that.
This is true. This is true.
You know, we have problems that we've got to solve, people. It's 7 o'clock, cliffcentral.com on a Friday. We've got exciting people joining us in the next hour. We've got Desmond Dube coming in, which is going to be amazing. Very keen to talk to him. You can finally put your question to him about his mother. Is his mother Lillian Dube? We'll find out. But Desmond Dube is going to join us in a short while. Why? Because he's doing a pantomime, and he wants you to go and see his pantomime. I mean, the man's working hard. He's not coming here for his health. So we'll talk to him in a little bit. He's famously a theatrical actor. He starred along many other South African greats and done proper movies. He's worked with Leon Schuster. He is known for the number one ladies detective agency, Hotel Rwanda, which was a massive international hit.
I love that.
Suburban. Ladies detective agency. Remember Suburban Bliss?
Suburban Bliss, suburban.
That's
bliss.
So nice when you sing Bolero. And Dube on Monday. So we'll speak to Desmond Dube just now, and I'm very excited to have him on the show. Also, George Meany joining us later, and the podcast of the week, which I can't wait to tell you about. Lots of good stuff on the way. Just before, on this week's episode of Health Matters, remember we told you about Health Matters the other day? Our mindset and mental perspective have a big influence on how we cope with day-to-day stresses and challenges. John Sanai, you know him, is an author, a speaker, and a future strategist who has some interesting thoughts on the world, especially what is happening now, post-COVID, and where humanity might be headed. Health Matters is brought to you by Cipla. That's right. You can catch up on all the episodes on cliffcentral.com, on the Cliff Central app, Apple, Google Podcasts, or Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. That's Health Matters. Look it up today. Brought to you by Cipla. And go and listen to the episode with John Sanai. He's fantastic. We often have him on the show. And you can go and listen to him at length in Cipla's Health Matters.
CliffCentral.com